Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking about well water to start the show today and what you can do to make sure it's safe. My guests, Kevin Masaryk and Lisa Lehman. Kevin is an outreach specialist for the Center for Watershed Science and Education at the UW-Stevens Point. Lisa is a private water section chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. What questions and concerns do you have about well water? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. And Lisa Lehman, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
And Kevin Masaryk, great to see you again as well.
You too.
Let's talk about the Bureau of Drinking Water first, Lisa. Tell us about what it does.
Well, thanks, Larry, and thanks to all your listeners for joining us today. At DNR, we regulate drinking water systems around the state. About 75% of us Wisconsinites get our drinking water from a public drinking water system, and that might be owned by a municipality or a community. And if you get your drinking water from one of those sources, there's a utility manager or an operator who's responsible for maintaining that system and doing regular monitoring. And so DNR works with those utility managers to make sure monitoring is done and that any contaminants that are found are addressed. If you're one of the 25% or so of Wisconsinites who gets your drinking water from a private well, you have to be your own utility manager, and it's going to be up to you to make sure that your well is properly constructed and maintained and that you sample it regularly to make sure you know what your drinking water quality is.
I think it's something like 900,000 families or households in the state are on private wells.
Right. We estimate between 900,000 and 1 million private wells around the state, most of which are residential wells.
Kevin, maybe talk a little bit with us about the Center for Watershed Science and Education.
So, yeah, our center is affiliated with UW-Stevens Point and UW Extension. And one of the roles that our center plays is assisting well owners, those people that need to act like their own utility manager, assisting them with understanding what they should be testing for, how to go about testing, and then interpreting those results. If there's anything wrong with it, either aesthetically or health-wise, we provide information to help them get the answers that they need.
And I imagine it's pretty important to get well water tested.
Correct. There's a variety of different common health-related concerns for private wells, things like bacteria, nitrate, or arsenic. And then a lot of times people are just concerned about the overall quality of the water. They might have a objectionable taste or odor to the water that they want to investigate, and we provide information to help them do that.
How often do we test water typically, or what's a good...
When someone has a new or replacement private well constructed, the well is automatically going to be tested for bacteria or nitrates, but that's just a one-time test. DNR recommends annual testing for bacteria for all wells and regular testing for nitrates.
And you do your own testing, or how's the testing done? Who does it?
So if it's a required test, let's say at the time of well construction or anytime there's well or pump work done, then there's you know, well driller or pump installer that would be able to perform that testing. But if an individual is just curious about their water, is going to take it upon themselves to do routine monitoring or testing, then it's really that person's responsibility to decide where they want to take a sample from or where they want to send a sample and what tests they want to perform. And for anybody that's interested in testing their water, it's really important that they contact the laboratory first.
Yeah.
Because there's oftentimes special kits or special sample bottles that they will need to ensure that the results are accurate.
You know, Larry, we have a great network of certified laboratories around the state of Wisconsin. So, and many of them will be able to ship things FedEx, or you can find a local laboratory. So like Kevin said, that's a great first step for a private well owner if they're interested in testing their well water and they're not sure where to start. Labs have kits, instructions, they have packages of a set of contaminants that they'll test for a reasonable price. And that's really a good way to get started.
So a reasonable price would be in the $50 range?
It really depends on what you're testing for. If you're just going to do a bacteria test, I'd say $25 to $50. You know, if you're talking about an additional test for nitrate, you might be talking about $20 to $30 for that. So it's really going to depend on how many individual analytes or tests you want to run. But they're going to be cost comparable, you know, across laboratories usually.
And I suppose if you use your put your thinking cap on a little bit, if you are surrounded by agricultural land, for example, you might want additional testing versus, let's say, my cabin that's in the middle of the woods in Bayfield County.
Certainly, there's tests that you can do, and if those tests show certain things, then it might prompt some additional testing. A good example is nitrate.
Yeah.
If you suspect the source of nitrate is agricultural fertilizer use, then you might be more likely to test for something like pesticides. If you live in the middle of a forest and your initial nitrate test is low, pesticides wouldn't necessarily be something that you'd want to consider.
And I've seen the testing results, and I've had a chance to look at them. They seem pretty straightforward. But what kind of information do you get back?
When a laboratory sends you back your test results, they will tell you what the actual numeric quantity or value is for whatever they've tested for. But they'll also alert you if it's above a safe drinking water level or above a health standard. And then typically they will provide you some general information about what that might mean. We also have information on DNR's website, on the Center for Groundwater Education, and our State Department of Health Services. We work collaboratively together to get information out to folks about what that number might mean in terms of the health effects for anyone that's drinking the water.
And if there's I've got a bad well and I got to get that well done, and I don't have any money, is there financial help for dealing with this or not?
There is. The state has two well grant programs that are available, both for someone who may be wanting to fill and seal a well that they're not using anymore, or to address well contamination. Those are for low-income individuals, so there is an income threshold.
Sure.
But those grants are readily available through the state. There are also some rural development grants that are available through counties coming from federal dollars. Those are also based on have an income limitation.
Well, you know what? Every one of our lines is filled. So let's go to the phones for some calls here. Philomena in DeSoto, it's your turn first. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks, Larry. I did go through the testing process for our new well, because we have a new home. And my question is, it came back that we have very hard water, and I can confirm that every time I do the dishes. My question is not doing a water softener in any way doing damage to the water system that we have?
Okay.
To the fixtures, to the any of the, you know, maybe this is more of a building construction question, but perhaps your experts know this.
I think so. Kevin, do you want to take that?
Yeah, so there's a number of problems with hard water, you know, mainly aesthetic problems. We're not necessarily concerned about hardness from a health standpoint, but it can cause scaling within the plumbing system. It's going to cause, if you have a dishwasher, you're going to need to use typically more dishwashing detergent or laundry detergent to clean clothes. You're also going to be a little bit more worried or concerned about the water heater. Especially if you have an electric water heater, that scale buildup can act like an insulator on that heating element and cause the water heater to have to work harder to heat water to the desired temperature. So for a number of reasons, there's some benefit in removing that hardness through that softening process. That softening process would remove calcium and magnesium, those elements which would contribute to scale, and they would replace it with sodium. That's how water softeners work, and it's a very simple, kind of proven technology that people have relied on for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you attach a softener, then I'm assuming you attach it only to the hot water so that you aren't, you know, and when you're drawing cold water, say, for cooking or something, it's not treated with salt, correct?
That's a good observation. Most people will bypass their primary drinking water faucet, so their cold water kitchen tap, would be unsoftened, and most people will bypass their outside faucets because there's no point in softening water that's going to watering the lawn or watering the plant. So not necessarily all the cold water would be unsoftened, but there would be a few faucets that you wouldn't typically run to the softener, run from the softener.
There we go.
Okay, so you have to segregate it somehow. Okay, yeah. That's good to know.
And treatment installers are pretty familiar. That's a pretty standard approach. So when you work with a certified installer, they'll be able to
Help you out. Yeah. Thanks, Philomena.
Okay, thank you.
Irvin and Burnett, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My concern is about wheat tile in farmers' fields. Most agricultural land has got some slope to it, and it's got some low spots, so a lot of farmers have wheat tile in. In the meantime, they come and dump by the tens of thousands of gallons liquid manure on top of the field. The ground isn't even worked up, but those wheat tile aren't very deep. They're meant to drain surface water. And most of the time, they empty into some creek or et cetera, which drains right into the Hork and Marsh around here by Burnett. And I don't think the DNR has ever even given it a consideration.
Well, let's go to Lisa Lehman for that. Thank you for calling, by the way, Irvin.
Yeah, thank you, Irvin, for that question. You're in an interesting area of the state that has a geology where there can be some fracturing in the bedrock and bedrock close to the surface. So it is an area that is more vulnerable to contamination from the surface getting into the groundwater. So I'm glad that you're paying attention and that you're concerned. DNR does have regulations and nutrient management standards that agricultural operators have to meet when they're applying manure on the landscape. So that is fairly closely regulated. In your kind of part of the state, that is more challenging to make sure that the farm fields where they might be applying their manure are being incorporated into the soil and being used as a nutrient for plants and not getting into the groundwater. But there are regulations that apply to those activities. If you ever observe liquid manure or manure laden runoff going directly into a stream, or certainly if somebody would observe that in their well or drinking water, please call the DNR tips line right away and report that, because that would be something that we would want to investigate and prevent.
Yeah, and the tips line, I forget the tips line number. It's pretty straightforward number, isn't it?
Oh, shoot. I forgot. But if you go on DNR's website and just type in the word tips, yeah, it'll pop up. You can report it by phone or by email.
We'll post that. Jill will, in her efficiency, will find that tips number, and we'll have
it up
on our Facebook page, and we'll give it to you online here in a minute or two. Thanks a lot for calling, Irvin. Our guest today, Kevin Masaryk, Outreach Specialist for the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point, and Lisa Lehman, Private Water Section Chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater at the Wisconsin DNR. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Right now, taking a look at well water quality with Lisa Lehman from the DNR and Kevin Masaryk from the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. A couple of open lines. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And we did, Jill got that tips phone number up. It's the hotline number for the DNR. It's 800-847-9367. 1-800-847-9367. And we'll have that posted on our Facebook page as well. You can go to that if you just didn't get it written down. Let's go to Vilas in Richland Center next. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. I bought an old farmhouse, and it had a well, and it had been used and everything. There have been people there before I bought it 11 years ago. But the water has a smell, bad smell. I was told it was just iron in the water by the realtor that sold it to me. But there's a filter in the basement that filters from the well. There's also a filter under the kitchen sink. That is where I get use my drinking water, because it doesn't smell. And if the water is pure, white, you know.
Yeah.
The other water that comes from the hot water heater smells horrible, and my son won't even take a shower at the house when he comes to visit because it smells so bad.
Yeah.
The cold water doesn't smell as bad as the hot water. And the hot water heater is quite new. It's only a year or so old, maybe two.
Yeah.
And I was told by the water softening man here in our town that if I take that rod out of the hot water heater, that it goes down through an ion rod or whatever it's called, that would alleviate a lot of that bad smell. Please explain to me.
Sure. Kevin Masaryk, let's go to you.
Yeah, so what you said about it being mostly in the hot water makes a lot of sense because there's what we call sulfate-reducing bacteria that can typically live and colonize hot water heaters sometimes. So again, if the problem's isolated to the hot water, that might give some evidence that it is a sulfate-reducing bacteria issue within the hot water tank. And that bacteria does have some affinity for the anode rod that would be found in a hot water heater. That sacrificial anode rod is designed to absorb some of the corrosion so that it doesn't affect your hot water tank as quickly. Removing it is one strategy, but that rod's in there for a reason. So we actually recommend replacing it with a different type of anode rod. So there's different metals that can be inserted that would still allow for some of the properties of that sacrificial anode rod to work, but reduce the amount of smell that you would associate mm-hmm. with that water. Also, you know, if it's a lot of people will call and say that they have smell in all the water in their house and they don't enjoy it, especially when they're drinking the water. For a problem like that, one of the easiest things to do is just fill up a pitcher of water and put it in the fridge and drink out of that, because a lot of the odor issues that we associate with water involve dissolved gases that if they're allowed to vent off, will improve the taste and the odor of the water dramatically.
And typically that's not harmful, those particular gases or whatever.
Correct. That's a great point. You know, the iron or sulfate-reducing bacteria that Vilas is talking about, we generally don't associate with health complications or considerations. And a lot of the odors and aesthetic problems that people have with their water aren't necessarily associated with health problems either.
Mm, there we go. Thank you, Vilas, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you would you go back to the water softener people, or who would you go to for a different rod?
You know, whoever installed the hot water heater,
they should have,
this should be a very common request from people in Wisconsin. It's one of the more common questions we get.
Particularly if it's in his area, there's probably other wells that have the same issue. And so the hot water people would be really up on that, I would think. Thanks again for calling. Tim and Summers, we'll go to you next. Hi, Tim.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. A couple of years ago, some neighbors reported finding molybdenum in their water at rather high levels. And I've been trying to find, some of the standards have varied depending on who's testing, but we're in the high 80s or in the 80s. And we were wondering about a filtering that. Generally, our water is very good. It's very very palatable. It isn't terribly hard. So, a lot of conflict as to what sort of filter to use.
Lisa Lehman, let's turn to you for that.
Tim, just a question first. Have you had your own well water tested to determine if you have some molybdenum or at high levels?
Our test indicated it was in the 80s.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so I misunderstood. Yeah. Right, so then you may want to look into having a treatment system, and I can't give you a specific recommendation here over the radio, but I would encourage you to talk to a treatment company and see what options might be available for that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there is the Department of Safety and Professional Services maintains a website for product approval, those devices that have product approval for sale in Wisconsin. And on that website, you can search by contaminant, and molybdenum would be one of them. And that would ensure that whatever devices are on that list have gone through the proper vetting process to ensure that they can remove those various contaminants of concern.
That's the Department of Safety and
Professional Services. Probably the easiest way to find that list is actually to go to the DNR's What's Wrong With My Water website, and there is a link to that product approval list.
All right. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Dennis in Waukesha, your turn. What's on your mind, Dennis?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is the second time in about 2 or 3 weeks that I've heard some misinformation about water softeners on public radio. So I had to call in. A water softener does not add salt to the water. What happens is there's a small tank and a big tank, usually. The big tank has got the salt in it. The small tank has a product called resin. It's a plastic material. There's probably several million little beads in there. And your hard water passes through that resin bed, as it's called, and the magnesium in the water, which makes it hard, and some of the calcium, is attracted to those beads. And so you get soft water because it no longer has these minerals. What happens during regeneration is that water is added to the salt, and that salt water, it runs over the resin bed in the opposite direction, and it causes an ion exchange. And the salt ions, or sodium ions, are exchanged with the magnesium, and the magnesium is flushed away. Now, of course, you're left with the salt. So the water softener goes into another method where it rinses the bed again and removes most of the salt. It can't remove all, but
yeah.
The amount that's left is very, very minimal.
Thanks for that call. Kevin Masaryk, you want to talk about that a little bit?
So yeah, you're half right in that you are using a salt to regenerate that bed. And the sodium, the calcium and magnesium are being exchanged for sodium. So the sodium is added to the water. The chloride is half of the salt that gets sent to the septic system. But that sodium does remain in the water, and we can measure that. If someone were to test their water before and after the softening process, we can predict how much sodium we'd expect in that water based on the starting concentration of the hardness. So if your hardness level was, let's say, 200 milligrams per liter of calcium and magnesium, we would predict that about 100 milligrams per liter of sodium would be added back in. So you are correct. You're half right in that some of the salt, half of the salt, the negative ions, are discharged to the septic system and not into your plumbing. But sodium would be added back at a certain ratio that's relatively predictable.
Yeah.
But is it significant?
For most people, it's not going to be. But for people that are on a low sodium or strict low sodium diet, that amount of salt might be significant. Let's say you're adding back in 100 milligrams per liter or 200 milligrams per liter of sodium. That's probably the equivalent of, a serving of Campbell's soup. But most people would not be affected by that. But again, if your doctor says to limit your sodium intake, drinking softened water might be something to avoid.
Yeah.
I see.
All right. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Jim in Gutenberg, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I don't actually have a well, but I have a cabin, and I have a 275-gallon reservoir that I carry water out to and fill it. How often should I have that tested, and should I supplement the chlorine in the city water that I put in here or anything like that? What would be your recommendation?
Well, we don't have any specific recommendations for that kind of situation, but I would treat it similar to a well. You never know when some part of the plumbing or fixtures could fail, and it could be vulnerable to bacterial contamination. So certainly I would check it once a year for bacteria. Seems like a wise approach.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to go to Facebook for a second. Jackie on Facebook says she recently found out she has lead in her water. The well's about 9 years old. The lead is supposedly at a very low acceptable level, but she doesn't want any of it. So do normal water filters like Brita or a pitcher or a refrigerator filter eliminate all the lead?
Well, Jackie, I'm really glad that you tested for lead and that you've written in about it. It obviously, that's been in the news a lot, and it's more tends to be more of an issue with municipal water systems and the service lines and the mains that may have older components. But occasionally, there can be some sources of lead in a newer well or newer system, and really, no level is safe when it comes to lead. So it's good that you're looking into that. As far as the different treatment systems, I would definitely check with the check on the specifications for each of those filter types to verify. And I think there again, you can also look at the DSPS website and see whether they treat for lead and to what levels.
Yeah.
So for pitcher type filters or refrigerator type filters, oftentimes those won't necessarily be on the Department of Safety and Professional Services website.
Okay.
But the National Sanitation Foundation is kind of a national independent group that does testing of those types of devices. And they have certain standards. Check if you're concerned primarily about lead. Look for the NSF 53 standard on that box or on that package. And that would tell you that there is some capacity of that device to remove lead, although it's also how it's being used and how it's being operated. Just know that those devices don't last forever, and those charcoal, the activated carbon, needs to be replaced on a regular basis for it to work effectively.
Another Facebook person, Kevin, had asked about about lead too, and mentioned reverse osmosis, wondering about it.
So that is another type of treatment that would be effective for lead. For anybody on a private well, a lot of times what we see is that the lead is coming from something within the plumbing system, either lead solder or it could be brass fixtures. All of those components will contain some amount of lead, especially if it's older, prior to 1985. So what we see is that letting the water run for a minute or two, if you're on a private well, is generally sufficient to flush any standing water from the lines and greatly reduce the amount of lead that people might be exposed to. So that would be one thing to try. If you've measured lead in a private well situation, maybe consider testing that water again after allowing the water to flush for a minute or two, and that might be a viable strategy for reducing their exposure to lead rather than going through the added expense of installing some sort of treatment system.
And I would just add, there's opportunities to have a whole house reverse osmosis system, but you can also have a reverse osmosis or other kind of treatment system just installed on a particular tap. So if you're concerned just about the drinking water and you do want to install treatment, you can do it, say, on your kitchen tap rather than having to incur the additional expense of treating the whole house.
Krista on Facebook says she was an intern at a county public health department and found the only way to get people to test their water was to have someone physically go to the house. She wonders if you have ways to help persuade people about this important issue.
So there's a lot of people that might be uncomfortable with the whole sampling process. And for those people, I would encourage them to call a well driller, a pump installer, a well inspector to come out and take that sample for them. But what we see based on the work that I do is that for any given area, you know, most people, the barriers to testing is that they don't know what to test for or they don't know where to send a sample. So if the county or the health department or some local entity can provide a convenient way to test, or some information that gets over those common barriers, people will be more likely to test. You're never going to get everybody to test their well, but we want to make sure that those people that are curious or have the interest in testing aren't limited by information.
Mark emailed and asked where he can go to get advice on installing a new well.
We have information on DNR's website about well construction, and to construct a well in Wisconsin, unless you're going to construct one say, a driven point well on your own property, you do have to have a license and be a licensed well driller. So I would recommend talking to licensed well drillers in your area. They'll give you an estimate. They'll let you know how deep it needs to be. Licensed well drillers have to go through an annual continuing education, and they study the well construction reports for other wells that were constructed in the area to help them design what would be needed on your property.
Let's go to Lori in Vernon County next. Hi, Lori. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have a lot of frac sand mines here in western Wisconsin. Some of the companies promise that they're going to be putting monitoring wells. I'm wondering what they're monitoring for when they put these wells in. I'm also wondering what else one could expect when they basically they're removing the aquifer when they mine for this sand, because that's where the water resides. So what kind of problems can we look for as these wells take over, these companies take over our landscape? And if you have any more updates on Kewaunee County and the water situation there, I'd be really happy to hear about that as well.
All right, thank you for calling. Kevin Masaryk, let's go to you.
So when it comes to frac sand mines, there a lot of those mines are mining the unsaturated zone, so sand and gravel that isn't necessarily completely filled with water, which would be the areas above the what we would consider to be the aquifers. In some cases, they are mining below the water table, and they might have to dewater that aquifer. But the majority, I think, are above what we would consider to be the actual aquifer. In terms of what might be potential concerns, or what might be things that they're monitoring for, there's certainly various metals and minerals that they would be monitoring for to see over time if those are changing. And particularly in areas where they have to dewater to mine that material or lower the water table, various metals could be more of a concern, just because changes in the chemistry of the water when you dewater that aquifer. So if you live within a quarter to a half mile of one of those facilities, it might be good to have some sort of baseline information to compare over time whether or not it's changing. And we don't have a lot of good data at this point to say for sure if it's going to change.
Yeah.
And Lori also asked about Kewaunee County, and for folks that maybe haven't followed those issues, that is an area similar to one of our earlier callers where the bedrock is close to the surface, very shallow soils, and so agricultural activity can potentially impact groundwater in that area. And so there's been a lot of work and conversations around protecting groundwater from manure spreading. So the department's been working on and is moving through the rulemaking process on targeted standards for more restrictive regulation of manure spreading in those areas that are vulnerable to try to further protect groundwater. DNR has also established an opportunity for people, if you experience or believe that you have livestock contamination in your private well, you contact DNR, and if you meet certain criteria, we'll provide temporary drinking water to you until we can investigate and determine what the source is. So that's a new opportunity that we have available to people if you do have an E. coli positive well test or some evidence that there's manure in your drinking water. We want to assist people right away getting them clean water while we can investigate and try to prevent that source.
Thanks again for that call. Rock in Montello, your turn now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm in Monticello, which is in Greene County. I live about a mile from where a CAFO has been established, and the nitrate level in my well water has gone from 8 to 10 to 11 to 12. I'm told that levels over 10 are hazardous, but I haven't been able to find out why that's considered hazardous.
Yeah. Good question. Let's turn to you, Kevin.
So that standard is an EPA standard, EPA's primary drinking water standard of 10 milligrams per liter for nitrate. And the primary concern is infants less than 6 months of age or women who are or trying to become pregnant because of concerns, a condition called methemoglobinemia, which affects infants, or various birth defects or miscarriage risks associated with women who are pregnant. So for those reasons, there is that 10 milligram per liter standard. The state of Wisconsin also has language that recommends everyone avoid long-term consumption of nitrate over 10 out of abundance of precaution, because we don't have a lot of data on what the long-term health complications are of drinking water with nitrate at that level long-term. Again, if you're on a municipal water supply, they're required to meet drinking water standards. So the amount of people that are actually drinking water with nitrate above 10 milligrams per liter is quite small.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Lynn in Pleasant Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, too. We are on Pleasant Lake, which is a glacial lake, and we're in the Sand Counties. We have a CAFO just to our west, and then they're trying to build another one, which will come right out of our aquifer. We've spent over $400,000 fighting this thing to protect our water and our wells. Anyway, they're going to do testing over Labor Day weekend, and my question is, they are targeting a certain area to do the testing, which is not where Kirk and I live. So my concern, my wonder is, should we get our well tested as a baseline test at this point in time before this Richford Dairy goes in, so that we have some a baseline for testing?
Yeah, understood. Let's go to Lisa Lehman.
Thanks. Thanks for your question, Lynn, and being concerned about the groundwater in your area. You will never hear Kevin and I disagree with somebody who's interested in testing their well. We would always encourage people to test it, particularly if you don't have any past test results or nothing recent. It's good to get, like you said, that baseline. That's the only way you'll really know what your current water quality is or if anything changes over time with land use changes in your area. So if your well is not targeted for testing, in this upcoming analysis, I would certainly encourage you to do your own testing.
There we go. And thanks again, Lynn. Joe in Oshkosh, your turn.
Hi. I've got a cottage up in northern Wisconsin with a well and having a problem with the iron caused by bacteria, a little film that is on fixtures if you let the water sit. And was thinking about shocking the well to remedy that, and I've been to the DNR website, and it looks like something a homeowner can do, and I was wondering if that's the case and you would have any tips or advice on that.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kevin, do you want to take that?
Sure. They're shocking a well is something that a homeowner could do on their own to their own well. There is a procedure on the DNR website. There's a publication they put out called Bacteriological Contamination of Private Wells. There's also one called Iron Bacteria in Private Wells that outline the procedure that we would want or recommend homeowners use. We never want people dumping straight bleach down a well because that's a fairly caustic substance and can corrode and deteriorate components in the well water system. But by diluting that bleach at the proper ratios and adding the right amount of that solution and flushing that material out, that is something that homeowners can do if they feel comfortable. But if they don't feel comfortable or they're overwhelmed by that set of instructions, they should contract with somebody to do that for them.
And thank you very much for calling. And boy, that 45 minutes flew by in a hurry. Lisa and Kevin, thank you so much. Hopefully we'll get you back and we'll do this again.
That'd be great.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much. Kevin Masaryk, Outreach Specialist for the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UW-Stevens Point. Lisa Lehman, Private Water Section Chief for the Bureau of Drinking Water and Groundwater with our Wisconsin DNR. And we have some links to their sites on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show in case you didn't get that information written down earlier. Well, we're going to turn our attention... Well, okay. Well, we're going to turn our attention from wells to oak trees next and talk about preserving Wisconsin oaks next on the Ideas Network.